So thank you all for coming to the first year at Fukuoka Con. So this week, as was indicated by the short introduction I wrote, we're basically just going to meander our way through the Pesukim and through the various statements that Chazal have about the sugya of Fukuoka Con, trying to see what directions Chazal, Midrashim, the Gemaras are pointing us in, and to see how the different sources jive together and what questions are left open by the Gemaras that's going to be left for the Rishonim and the Achronim and the modern Poskim to decide. We're going to see that the way things work in general is that the earlier the sources are, the more vague they are, and as things develop in history, as things proceed, sources become much more explicit as to what's asa, what's mutter, much more defined in a very rigorous way. So if you read a tshuva by Moshe Feinstein about Thanksgiving, it's going to be much more specific than reading the Pesukim, or reading the Midrashim, or reading the Gemaras. So we'll take the sugya down from the Pesukim all the way down to the tshuvos of Moshe Feinstein about Thanksgiving. Great. So there are Pesukim scattered throughout the Torah about Chukas HaKom. The three contexts I chose were two in Vayikra and one in Devarim, because I think they're important in terms of the nature of Chukas HaKom. So let's read these Pesukim together. I put on a couple of Pesukim before and afterwards in order to get the broader context. So the first source is where the actual words Chukas HaKom come from. This is the pasuk everybody quotes in terms of defining the Aser. And the context is a context of a rayos, of a list of illicit relationships. So Hashem says, I'm your God. Therefore what? Don't follow the ways of the people in Mitzrayim whom you left. Don't follow the ways of the people in Canaan to where you're going. And those are the key words. Those are the words that formulate this Isser. Rather, what should you do? Rather, don't follow Chukos HaAkom. Don't follow the bad ways. Follow the Jewish ways. Follow my laws, Hashem says. Does not follow my laws. And then the Torah proceeds to give you a list of arayos. Ish ish or kol she'er b'saro lo sikrifu l'gal ha'serva. Don't marry your mother, don't marry your sister, etc., etc. Great. So that's context number one. Hashem says, don't follow the ways of Canaan. Don't follow the ways of Mitzrayim. Rather, follow my laws. Don't have any of these illicit relationships. So if you only had these psukim, you were trying to figure out what were these, v'chukosem lo silicho, what would you say?
Relationships.
The relationships. Something bad. Meaning, the Torah is clearly contrasting the ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim, the ma'asei eretz Canaan, with the chukim of Hashem. And the pasuk that describes these ma'asim seems to be v'chukosem lo silicho. So it's something bad. Hey, great. Point number one. Vayikra Perakov, two prokim later, has a second list of arayos, a parallel list. Some are some extra, some missing. The large discussion as to why there are two lists. But here, not preceding the list, but in the epilogue, we have a similar pasuk. Again, this is the end of the list of the arayos. Then we have pasuk kaf beis. Follow all my laws. Why should you follow my laws? So that the land won't spit you out, so that you'll be able to live in Eretz Israel. Again, the same formulation. Why? Because they did their bad actions, and Hashem said, I got disgusted with them, and I threw them out. And I'm going to tell you that you guys should follow the right ways, and then you're going to get Eretz Israel. And then Pasuk Chafei and Pasuk Chavav are like the epilogue, or the concluding Pesukim to the entire Parsha, to the entire section. Separate between kosher animals, not kosher animals, that. you should be kadosh because I'm kadosh. I separated you from the nations to be mine. Okay. So here, the psukim start off in a very similar way to the way they do in Perek Yud Ches. You have a description of all the bad actions of the non-Jews, all these illicit relationships, the bad things to do. Torah says, Lo si lechu b'chukos ha-gai. Seemingly, you shouldn't do these things. Why? Because they're disgusting. Great. So up until that point, you had the same exact thing as you had in Parshas Akrimos, in Perek Yud Ches, two prakim earlier. But over here, the concluding psukim of the Parsha seem to insinuate or seem to be driving in a slightly different direction. Not that you should separate yourself from the bad things of the non-Jews because the things they do are disgusting, the things they do are going to cause you to get kicked out of Eretz Israel, but rather is a step in the positive direction. Not that don't do what they do because they're bad, rather, Pasuk Chavav, Bisem li kedoshem, ki kedosh ani Hashem, va'avdil askem ha'amim liosli. Sounds like there's an inherent value in being different. Let's say something the non-Jews do isn't necessarily negative. It's not a kutzbam. It's not something that's immoral, illicit relationships. Still, v'isim li kedoshim, that the Jews have to be held to somewhat of a higher standard. They have to be kadosh. They have to be different. And that's why the concluding words are v'abdil aschem min ha'amim liosli. Great. So that's in terms of the context. Just if you want to be very precise in terms of the language the Torah uses, one word. So in this iser of chukos akum, you have a noun and you have a verb. So what's the noun? The noun seems to be chukos. Don't do these chukos. So what's a chuk in Torah language?
Something without a reason.
Exactly, something without a reason. Again, that's something important that they take note of. The Torah doesn't say don't follow the actions of the non-Jews. The Torah doesn't say don't follow the mishpatim of the non-Jews. Also, a parallel word to a law uses the word chok. A chok, as Yosef pointed out, has two meanings, but there are two connotations. Number one is that it's a law. A chok is something that's legislated. It's not just something that they happen to do, something random that they happen to do, a cultural activity, a cultural phenomenon, something of that sort. A chok, in its most technical definition, means a law. That's why the Torah contrasts, v'chukosem lo silichu, what should you do? Es mishpatai ta'asu v'chukosai tishmaru. Don't follow their laws, follow my laws. The Torah is contrasting chukos akum with the laws of the Torah. So number one is that it seems to be a law. Number two, as Yosef pointed out, it's a law without a reason. A mishpat, according to Chazal, is a law which has a reason. Shabbos, kashrus, something of that sort. A chok is something which we can never fully understand. Yeah?
Can I ask two quick questions?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so in the Pesukim in Yud Ches, it says, K'ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim.
Yeah.
And K'ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim. And then later it says, V'chok Haseh Amos Helechu. Would you read Kamase in light of Chuk Hoseam as being Kamase just refers to specific laws, or would you say Maase is kind of more general?
Right. What would your initial read be? I think if you read it either way.
I don't know.
It sounds like it could be two separate things, or Chuk Hoseam Lo Siliko could be a concise formulation of Maase Eretz Mitzrayim, Maase Eretz Canaan.
I guess my gut is to say that it's not limited to just legislated laws. It includes practices. And I don't know. I know that there might be some sources that say that there were laws that you had to... I mean, laws... What would a law be for Eros, Abicha, Eros, Yimecha, Ustiala?
Exactly. That was going to be my next point. But the psukim that follow don't seem to be legislative laws. There's no... At least as far as I know, there's no law in ancient society. Michael happens to read academic Bible books, so it could be he knows things more than me.
Only in shul.
I
don't know.
I wish I had time. But I should probably dive into a slower menu, so I'll have more time to read things.
That's a consideration.
But Hukosein lo Seilichu, if you want to take it in a technical sense of a legislated law, doesn't seem to describe the list that comes subsequent to it. Again, we are just reading the psukim, getting our impressions of the broader context and the technical definitions, the words, and we'll see how these things are understood by Chazal. That's the noun, hukos. What is the verb in terms of the iser itself in both places? It's lo silechu, lo silechu. Do not go, do not walk. It doesn't say do not keep, do not follow, do not lishmor the hukos of the non-Jews. It says lo silechu, b'chukosem lo silechu, v'lo silechu b'chukos hagai. So there seems to be a different connotation to not walking in their laws, walking in their hukos, than not keeping their laws or keeping their hukos. The contrast is somewhat clear, because it says the hukosim lo silechu, but in terms of the mitzvot of Hashem, it says es mishpatai ta'asu es hukosai tishmeru. So here you have ta'asu and tishmeru in terms of mitzvos, in terms of Hashem's mitzvos. In terms of the hukos of non-Jews, it's lo silechu. The Torah changes the verb that it uses. So again, if you had at least at first blush, what you might think is that ta'asu tishmeru is more technical. Do them, keep them. Do X, don't do Y. Lusi laku doesn't sound like it's just do this, don't do that. It sounds like more it's like a way of life. Don't follow them. Don't walk after them. Don't become attached to them. It might be something more than just a technical action or refraining from an action.
Also, yes. I mean, this might be something that comes up later, but it also seems to me that it's very limited in scope. It's talking specifically about Mitzrayim and Canaan. It's not talking about non-Jews. It's not even talking about of the Avodah Zarah in general. It's talking about specifically these specific people, these people who enslaved you in Mitzrayim, and these specific people who I'm expelling from Eretz Canaan. Their ways you have to avoid, or
their chukim. Right, you're saying a parak and ches to list the actual names of nations.
Right.
And just for contrast, parakaf doesn't list any nations. It just says, Lusil Hul B'kukos Hagai. No, Shun Hashim Melech Alchem. No, you're right. 100%. It also is focusing on the chukos of Canaan.
I'm surprised that it's even more narrow than of the Avodah Zarah.
You're foreshadowing a point that's going to be made in the future. You could almost always find a Rishon who is like the minority Shita, says something that's out of most people's box. But the Uraim, who is one of the Bali Tosfos, limits Hukos Akum to the seven nations of Canaan. He says anything, any Hukka, whatever a Hukka is, that's developed by a non-Jewish nation post the existence of those seven nations of Canaan, which we assume were somewhat decimated, or at least we don't know who they are nowadays, there's no prohibition. You can do whatever you want. Based on the formulations of the Pesukim. I didn't even realize it, but it's actually a Mefurash in Parakaf. Again, that's going to greatly limit the scope of the Yasar. Basically, anything you want is going to be okay nowadays. Great. So those are the Pesukim in Sefer Vayikra. Skip to the Pesukim in Sefer Devarim. These are Pesukim in Parashat A, describing, once again, what to do when you get to Eretz Israel. And these are psukim, which you wouldn't necessarily think were connected to our sugya. But as we'll see, Chazal seemed to have thought otherwise, and they were probably right. They were definitely right. Parakut Beis. Ki yachris Hashem l'kacha asikoyim asharta v'ashama v'reshos osam mikonacha. You're going to get to Eretz Israel. He's going to cast out the nations who are living there. You're going to inherit their land. So what should you know? Be careful, lest you tinakesh after them, after you destroy them. Whatever the word tinakesh means, we'll have to define it later. You might seek out their religions, their gods. How do these nations of Canaan worship their gods, and let me follow them. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Those saas achein Hashem lo kacha, ki kol tovas Hashem asher sanei asu de lohem. Don't do that to Hashem, because they worshipped in disgusting ways. They even burned their children as part of their rites and worships. Great. So what do these pesukim sound like? If you just read them at first blush, yeah, sounds like
don't do
a Avodah Zarah, right? And you would think it stops there. Great. So that's in terms of the pesukim. And we'll see, as we go through Chazal and Rishonim, how many of our inferences from the Pesukim were correct, how many are incorrect, and we'll have to see exactly why. Great. So, Midrash HaHalacha. So here's what Chazal have to say about these Pesukim, commenting on the Pesukim themselves. So this is the first two are from the Sifra, from Toras Karnim, which is the Midrash HaHalacha and Sefer Vayikra. And the last one, the third one, is from the Sifrei, which is the Midrash HaHalacha and Sefer Devarim. Mike, would you like to read this? Okamasei Eretz Mitzrayim.
Okamasei Eretz Mitzrayim, Okamasei Eretz Kanan Lo Ta'asu. Yachol Lo Yivnu Binyanos, Lo Yivnu Binyanos, Lo Yidu Netios, Kamosam. Tama Lo Mar Bechul Vaseim Lo Seilechum. Lo Amarti Ela Bechukim HaChukim Lahem, Ulaboseim, Ulaboseim. Uma Hayu Osim, Ha'ish Nosei Le'ish Ve'ha'isha Le'isha. Ha'ish nosei isha u'bita ve'isha nisei z'l'shnayim. L'kach nemar v'chuk v'seyam l'seyolechum.
Great. So what's the starting point of this medrash? What's the yachol? I mean, what would you think if you just read the first half of the pasuk? It says, you would think that you can't do anything the non-Jews do. Basically, non-Jews build buildings. Non-Jews plant trees. They plant things in their fields. So if that's what, those are the ma'asim of Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Kanaan, Torah says, we can't do them. So you would think, you can't do anything. Anything non-Jews do, even if it's completely neutral, completely secular, completely logical, and necessary for the world to function, still, we can't do that. So that's what you would think if you just had the first half of the pasuk, k'ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim, u'k'ma'asei eretz Kanaan. So the Torah... Sorry, Michael.
It doesn't necessarily have to be... I mean, the yachol doesn't have to be things that... But there's good reason for it. It could be just conventions, frivolous conventions.
It could be, but the two examples it gives, the Yivnu Binyanos, Yitu Netios,
Kamosam,
you're saying Kamosam means the way they do it, which may be random, or frivolous, or maybe even religiously oriented. Granted, it is a possible read of the Sifra. I would assume the simple read is that you can't do anything that they do, meaning don't build buildings, don't plant trees. The Torah has a second half of the pasuk, as a counter. Limits it to certain things. So according to this medrash, what is it limited to? Things that are chakok, things that are laws, sounds like laws that are legislated from their ancient days. Things that are well established in the non-Jewish legal system. So what is well established in the non-Jewish legal system? So the Midrash gives you some examples. Ha'ish no se le'ish. Sounds like homosexual marriages. Isha v'isha. Same thing. Ha'ish no se isha uvita. A man can marry a mother and a daughter. Isha nisei shnayim. A woman can marry two people. Those are all examples of legislations in the non-Jewish society. And therefore, that's what the Torah means when it says, Hukukoseim lo seileko. So two things. So in the end of the day, what is Hukukos Akom limited to, according to this Medrash? It's limited seemingly in two ways. Number one, it has to be something that's legislated, something that's on the books. That the legal system, not that it's legislated, that it's obligatory to do, but it's legislated, meaning that it's recognized as an institution in that society. Meaning in the states that allow gay marriage, there's no legislation that you have to have gay marriage. It's just a legislation that it's an institution that's recognized by the state. So that seems to be the way Hukim HaKukim Lahem LaBoseyam is taken by this Medrash. These things are established institutions in non-Jewish society. And what type of established institutions in non-Jewish society are we talking about? So the Medrash gives you four examples. So two of them, it's interesting, are already covered by the Pesukim themselves. Two of them are in the list of the arayos. Isha nisayis l'shnayim, a woman being married to two men, and ish nosei isha uvita, being married to a mother and a daughter. The first two examples aren't on, or may or may not be on the list of arayos. The first one seems to be. Second one, isha the isha, meaning lesbian marriage, doesn't appear on the list of arayos. So it seems like kuklas akum, according to this medrash, are number one, are institutions that exist in the legal system of the non-Jews, and number two, anything that relates to immorality. The immorality in the realm of marriage, immorality in the realm of marriage and relationships. Is that what it seems like? Michael, you seem like you want to argue. It's kukim lachukim lam lavo seyam. It's laws that are there, and the examples are all things that have to do with immoral marriages. So let's say non-Jews. I don't know. If non-Jews like standing in their head for 10 minutes a day, and that's what they do, so it doesn't sound like that's going to be something that's going to be prohibited by this pasuk, because it's nothing to do with immoral marriages. How do we know, how does this medrash know that chukos akum should be limited to immoral marriages? Presumably based on the pasukim, based on the context. The context says, chukoseim lo seleku, immediately gives you a list of arayos. So, Chukoseim lo seleku is teaching you something over and above that list of arayos, teaching you any institution in marriage that is going to be defined as immoral, something that's not so proper.
Okay, so, but are we taking... Okay, so how do you know whether something that's permissible to the goyim counts as something that's immoral or not? So you check the Torah to see if it lists any arayos, in which case it's usher anyway.
Right, so what...
Or what?
It seems like there's like a certain value system that certain people could glean out of these psukim and other psukim, and by using that value system, they'll determine if what's in non-Jewish society is defined as moral or not.
Well, is there any other like moral characteristics for between a man and a woman or not? Brother, sister, mother, father, like anything else?
Presumably not.
It would be immoral, even if it's not on the list.
Right.
It also seems kind of redundant.
If it was just what's on the list.
And if you're saying, see what they're doing is, if it's immoral, don't do it. You don't have, like, doshim to you, right? So it can't be immoral.
But it might be already covered by some general issur in the Torah. But you already have a specific issur of a kukosei mosei. And it's always better to have a more specific issur than a general issur.
Right, but if you're saying, go see what they're doing, then decide if it's immoral, it's no longer specific.
No, it's specific to anything that's
already covered.
That's already covered. No, meaning, let's say isha the isha. Let's say if non-Jewish society institutionalized lesbian marriage, and then so if the state of Israel would then go ahead and institutionalize it and allow it. So in addition to maybe violating other isurim, it would be a violation of this isur of kukoseim lo seleku. Yeah, maybe.
But if you're thinking about it that way, taking off what we just said, then it's not clear if it's usher because it's improper, or it's usher because non-Jews are doing it. Presumably, all of the things on this list would be usher, even if no one ever did them.
Oh, that's a very interesting point.
Could you come up with according to Medrash, is there anything that wouldn't be usher, but for the fact that the non-Jews are doing it, doesn't sound like I can come up with one single example that would be mutter in a society where non-Jews... Meaning, could we come up with a society where certain things would theoretically be mutter, but are usher to us because of the...
Let's say the second example, isha the isha.
So that would be mutter?
It wouldn't be under a specific Isser Deoraisa. Seemingly, at least. There's okay. No pasuk in the Torah.
So
that
it just became Usser like a few months ago.
I mean, apparently the Medrash says... Apparently it was...
It's like Mutter for the three or four generations.
Right, apparently...
It's still that time. But no, but is that, but like, that seems to be crazy. I'm trying to think of a less crazy way of understanding that.
Right. One other factor which I haven't mentioned is that I use the word marriage and relationship. You could take the Medrash in a more expansive way. It's not specifically talking about a marriage or relationship, or maybe anything immoral in terms of promiscuity, in terms of sexuality and things of that sort.
But otherwise
it's just the yachol is because it says kamase.
Right.
You want to just write kamase and said, oh, like the ways of. So I can't do anything that's in the ways of these folks. And then I see the Bukhuk Hussein, and you're absolutely right that it's saying, no, it's not kamasim, it's laws, it's something legal. So what would be legal about just general promiscuity?
I'm making up an example. Let's say in Arabic countries, they are very firm in terms of tzniut. So if they would all of a sudden come up and say that sleeveless shirts are okay, and then Jews would start doing it, so that might be something that Medrash would feel falls under the prohibition of Kukosim lo
sileko. After three generations.
After, whatever, yeah. Meaning if let's say the non-Jewish society you're living in, and we'll have to see if it depends on where you're living, but the non-Jewish society you're living in is an Arabic Muslim society, and they're extremely firm in terms of tzniut. All of a sudden, Osama bin Laden wakes up one day and decides to throw away Muslim hood. And he's allows, whatever he is. And he decides, he's going to allow all the people who follow him to leave, to wear sleeveless shirts.
So the implicit permissibility would be what's usher.
So the...
The lack of an usher. So the permissibility...
Meaning the fact that he is now on the books of that society allows something that's promiscuous, is that the word? At least institutionally allows it, would thereby create an issur for Jews to do that. Previously, it might have been usur based on some general tzniut, general moral issue. Now, you have a specific issur. Don't follow their immoral ways.
Is the word nosei pliable in that way, or is this...
No, I'm assuming there might be, I'm suggesting there might be an expanded version of this medrash. No say may not be just marriage, it might be anything having to do with this realm.
You're saying it's a practice, whereas here it's saying chukim.
Right, so chukim sounds like, again, it's not legislated in an obligatory way, but it's legislated in the sense that it's institutionalized, that the government, on the government books, or maybe... It's just known in society that this is okay. That's the way the society functions. Yeah, we'll have to see how much this metric plays a role in the later development of the sugya. It's going to, but we'll see. Right, that's sifra number one. Now we have sifra number two, another comment in the Torah's Kohanim. The Kukosim lo sileku. The metric starts off by asking, what's included in this pasuk of Kukosim lo sileku that wasn't asur previously? So why was asur previously? Fal kvar ne'amar lo yimatzei b'cha ma'avir bina uvito ba'ish v'gomer v'chover haver v'gomer ma'atam alamar v'kukosim lo sileku. This medrash is fascinating. It says, why do we need this pasuk of Kukosim lo sileku? We already have another pasuk. And it jumps to Sefer Devarim, to Parsha Shoftim. The psukim there, lo yimaseh b'cha ma'avir b'na u'bito, are a series of psukim that prohibit all forms of avodah zarah and sorcery. It says, do not give up your son to avodah zarah. Do not be menachesh. Do not be me'oneh. These psukim are not in the groceries, I apologize for that. But the medrash is saying that anything which you would think is included under the kukosei lo sileku is already included under this pasuk that prohibits all forms of sorcery and the avodah zarah. So just to note, it's starting off with the opposite assumption of the previous medrash. Previous medrash says, yako, you shouldn't build things, you shouldn't plan things, which might mean, in general, the havamina is that you can't do anything non-Jews do, even if it's completely secular or completely necessary. This medrash is starting off with the opposite assumption. The only thing you would think is asar are things that are sorcerous, things that are avodah zarah oriented, things that are clearly goyish and bad. Bad, goyish, I mean the negative connotation of goyish is probably not a good way of saying it. I apologize for that. Goyish in the way our grandparents say the word goyish, not the way we use it. Great. So what then does hukosemos dileko come to include? Again, we're starting off with an opposite assumption about the scope of hukosako. So this measure has three opinions. Number one, this big middle of the second line, shlo tilachu b'nimosov shavahen. Don't do what they, their laws, their customs. Nimos could either be a law or a custom, which is why it's confusing. Devar machakukin lahen. Again, sounds like legislation. Kigon teatateros karkosalos pa'astirios. Like theaters, circuses, and I think gladiator stuff. Okay, that's what it means. And gladiator stuff. Yeah. Theater, arena, gladiatorial show. So what happened in these theaters and circuses and gladiator stuff? So it sounds like, I don't know, maybe the people here know Roman history better than me. But was there any pagan rites or rituals that were occurred in their circuses and their theaters and places of that sort?
Probably.
So it could be referring to that. It could be that these things were connected with pagan rites. In which case, we're not expanding our initial definition so much. The initial definition was anything that's included in sorcery and avodah zarah. So we're expanding it to cultural phenomena that are connected with pagan rites. Going to circuses, going to theaters, and going to gladiator shows. If you would think that these things were disconnected from avodah zarah, they were just stam cultural phenomena, they were the baseball games, the basketball games of their day. So what the Medrash is answering is cultural phenomenon. Don't engage in non-Jewish culture. Again, building buildings, planting trees, things of that sort are going to be fine. Avodah Zarah, sorcery is definitely asar. Hukosei Mulusiliku are cultural phenomenon.
So the gladiators were really murderous and like it was animal torture and all those types of one step more than just not dressing like them.
I think it's a cultural phenomenon with a very negative kind of very negative aspects to it.
Right, it's not just, you know, I mean, not basically would dress would also be included in this.
Right, we'll get to dress in a second, but yeah. Hey, Michael.
So it says chakukim again. So if you think this is just cultural phenomenon, how do you read chakukim?
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure. Unless you think that these things were just, again, were the only way I thought to read it was that these things are institutionalized and got in their laws, meaning there were laws about gladiator shows or about theaters and circuses. I mean, there were set phenomena that they had laws about in their legal systems.
They can also be cultural laws. They don't have to be legislated.
Maybe have like a cultural norm? I don't know. It says
cultural norm. That's exactly it.
Right.
What's the cultural norm of theater? What would that be?
There's a certain etiquette.
You're not allowed to have certain aesthetic
views?
Well, no.
But going to theater is a cultural.
No, or the way you conduct yourself. For example, we were talking about briefly before Shira about funerals, right? So Israel conducts military funerals modeled after American military funerals. Maybe that's a problem.
I would understand that.
I mean, that's what... The truth is, there is some legislation about how to conduct military funerals. That's not the best example, but there could just be an etiquette. I don't know. For example, maybe there's a widespread practice in a country that brides at their wedding are white. So maybe that's usher, because that's what they do.
You'd have to be assuming an expanded definition or non-literal definition of chakuk. Chakuk, generally speaking, as far as I know, means something that's engraved in in terms of laws, it means legislated. I guess you have those two options then. Either expand chakuk to cultural norms as well, even though it's not officially in the law books, or anything that's important enough in society that has laws about it, even though it's not legislated in an obligatory way. I mean, they might have had laws regulating theater, circuses, gladiator shows, or things of that sort. And these are things which I should be checking out, but unfortunately I did not. I can ask people around while you. Great, so that's the first opinion. Rabbi Meir Omer, second opinion. Chukosim Lusiliku are coming to prohibit the Darki Amori that Chazal counted, Chazal listed. So what are these Darki Amori? So if you look in these, I think the 6th and 7th Prakim of Tosefta Shabbos, has a list of Darki Amori. Darki Amori, by and large, are superstitious things. Meaning that one example is if somebody's bread falls and he says, pick it up quickly so that I don't lose my bracha. Or somebody walks around with some type of pillow around his waist. For various reasons. The most famous of these Darki Amori, something that which has a lot of modern ramifications, is it says tying a red string around your hand. It's one of the Darki Amori. So it's happens to be a very widespread custom. There are tshuvos written about why people do it. If it's explicitly listed in Tosefta as being something that's superstitious and usher. But, stop. The.
I think I'm going to get more value out of it. Sounds like it was
awesome. It could be. The Hasidic rabbis in particular have chuzos about why it's okay. Because, that's what they're into. Kaparos on an Arab Yom Kippur, like taking a chicken, waving it around your head, and killing it. So Yosef Blanti is a Sephardi, so he's nodding his head. The Ramah says that you should do it. And the Shulchan Aruch says that it's Darki Amori. You shouldn't do it. Superstitious. So, great. So Rabbi Meir is saying Darki Amori, superstitious things listed by Chazal in that Tosefta, are what's prohibited by Chukosim Losileko. So again, we're keeping to our basic original definition according to this Medrash. Avodah Zarah, sorcerous stuff, is what's Asar. Just these things, these Darki Amori, aren't prohibited explicitly under Melnei Menachesh Chover Chaver, those things. They become Aser under Chukosim Losileku. So according to the first opinion, Chukosim Losileku is about theater circuses, either connected to Avodah Zarah or just connected to a negative culture. According to Rabbi Meir, seemingly it's definitely connected with superstition. Great. Nabido ben Misira Omer, third opinion in the Medrash, Shlo Tinchor. So Nechira is killing an animal without Shkita, just chopping off its head or doing something of that sort. So you shouldn't do that. Shlo Tegadol Tzitzis, you shouldn't grow your hair in a certain hairstyle. Shlo Tespor Komei Safa. Also, you shouldn't have another beard style or another hairstyle. So that's what gets included under Darki Hamori. So it seems to be a fairly disparate list of things. Don't kill animals without shechita. Do not grow your hair in a seemingly a non-Jewish hairstyle. Don't shave your beard in a non-Jewish beard style. So, without any outside information, this seems to be the most expansive definition we've had so far. If you think that these hairstyles and beard styles are not connected with some pagan ritual, and you think killing animals without shechita also isn't connected with any sort of pagan rituals, so then basically what he's saying is that doing non-Jewish things, such as killing animals without shechita or having non-Jewish hairstyle, fall under the prohibition of Kukos Hakam. Yeah, Michael?
I don't know. I kind of want to argue that if you want to say that don't do things like them, you don't say it like this.
You think that these... If you're giving examples have to be specific and...
Yeah, like, if you wanted to say don't do things like they do, say, something like what the other Midrash did. Like, lo yivnu b'nias k'mosam, lo yitunu t'yas k'mosam. Something kind of vague and generally.
Right, so... But that was... Leading up to the next point I wanted to make, which is the Abida B'Basiri doesn't say that. Meaning building buildings, planting trees like non-Jews is okay. It's dafka these three things. So the common denominator between these three things might be that something sinister hidden behind them, some pagan ritual type of thing, or there are cultural phenomenon which don't have any svara. There's no rationale. There's no positive reason. There's no way that it helps the world. Building buildings, planting trees, are things that are necessary for the world. They help the world out in various ways. Non-Jews breathe. We're not going to say Jews can't breathe. But something the non-Jews do without a basis, they just tongue. We have to rear their hair in a mohawk, which is what some people say Tisporco Misafa is, like a Mohawk type of haircut, where they kill animals, they kill their animals in a certain way before eating them. So those are things that are Eno Ma'ala V'Eno Morid. They're random. They're just the way society developed, the way that culture functions. So those things, things that are completely secular, completely disconnected from Avodah Zarah, from immorality, from anything, but they're baseless, they're without any specific reason or rationale, those are the things that are going to get included under Chukos Hakom. Again, so let's just summarize this Medrash.
It's pretty hard to have anything fit under there. It's pretty narrow.
Right, let's say playing base, let's say having three outs in an inning in baseball.
So meaning, I'm sure there's a reason. There is a reason. You can, I'm sure there's PhD dissertations on the evolution of baseball.
Right.
Meaning, and that's it. You could, the world doesn't function by random. Okay, there might be, you might be able to find one or two things that people do that, like, have literally no productive value, like, you know, reality television or something. But for the most part, like, things take hold in society for a reason.
It's a hairstyle. Meaning, in the 70s, wear their hair a certain way, now people wear their hair a different way. I mean, there's no, I guess, apparent rationale why that's true. It might reflect something about the culture or the development of that generation.
It's not positive.
It's not positive. There's no.
That requires us to make, like, the thing we're doing, it's working backwards, because in order to figure out whether something falls under the Isser of Chukos Hakom, we first have to decide if it's positive. We have
first
to make a value judgment and then figure out if it's in halacha, which seems to be backwards because halacha is supposed to help us make that judgment.
No, meaning, I don't think it's backwards. I mean, you could have maybe a better way to say it is that if you don't have to do a PhD dissertation to figure out why it's positive, figure out the rationale behind it. Meaning, the fact that back in the good old days, people of a certain trade or wore a certain type of clothing has some clear rationale. It's for identification. People wear ID badges, again, for the same purpose, for identification. Having a certain hairstyle might fit in with some broader cultural phenomenon that might be positive at the end of some PhD dissertation, but it's not so apparent, and therefore might fall under this prohibition. Let's just get to the next medrash, and then we'll talk after it. So it was one more medrash, and I guess we'll stop after that. This is the medrash on those Tzokim and Devarim, which are about Avodah Zarah. Painted Rosh Lelohan, do not seek out their gods. Shelo Tomar, Ho Ehin Yotzim Betena, don't say, just like the non-Jews walk out with traveler boxes, like, you know, like lunch boxes, whatever it is. I'm also going to do that. Since the non-Jews wear purple, I'm also going to wear purple. Just like they walk out, they go in the streets with helmets, with hats, I am also going to do the same thing. It's a quotation from the pasuk. I'm going to do the same thing. And the next pasuk says, no, Hashem doesn't want you to do that. So here we have a similar issue to the issue we had in the previous medrash. We have three random examples. Walking around with a lunchbox, wearing purple, and wearing caps or helmets. So either you could try to find something sinister, something immoral, something Avodah Zarah oriented or superstitious about these three things, or what the medrash seems to be saying at face value, which is just differentiate yourself from the non-Jews. If they're doing something, non-Jews wear purple, that became the fad, don't wear purple. That's a violation of Chukos Hakom.
It's also because I don't wear purple because they're wearing purple.
Right.
No, not just because that's the fashion, but because they're also wearing.
Or just, the metrics format in the opposite way, I think, but it's a very, very salient point. What's prohibited is to say, just because they're wearing purple, I want to wear purple to copy them. There's some intention in this medrash, which wasn't there in the previous medrash. I want to copy them, and therefore I'm going to wear purple. So that's what this medrash thinks is usur based on this pasuk, the Asakin Gamani. Again, not exact passage of Kukasnakon, but seems to fall under the general rubric. So just to summarize the different approaches which you seem to have identified in the Midrashim, the Havamina, that everything is Asar, building buildings and planting trees, that gets rejected. That's one extreme. You could definitely build buildings and plant trees. But in terms of the expansiveness of the scope, we seem to have a whole range of possible opinions. Either anything that they do that's somewhat unnecessary, wearing purple, walking out travelers boxes, whatever it is going to be Asar. That's number one. A second level might be cultural phenomenon, theater, circuses, things of that sort, if you don't think that's connected with pagan rites. A third level is going to be things that are immoral, meaning Isha no says Isha, things of that sort. And a fourth level is to limit it even more, to limit it dafka to things that are darki amori, things that are superstitious. And those seem to be the different possibilities that appear in the Midrashei Halakha. I guess next week we'll start with the Gemaras. We'll go through the Gemaras, see how the Gemaras relate to the Midrashim, and see how the Gemaras relate to each other, and then we'll move on from there to the Rishonim. Good. So thank you so much. And if people have any haros or hasagos or comments or critiques as to how to do this type of shiur, I would love to hear it. But I'll see you next week.